ladies and gentlemen, critters and boar critters and woodland critters. My name's Ian, and with me is my wonderfully cute friend.
Oi, bruv, my name's Josh. I am Josh Moore. Welcome. I am cute. He called me cute. Oh my God.
We will be your hosts for this episode. We're honored and grateful to have you and have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share with you our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it'll fit for you and your table. Today, we'll be at the feature table taking a look at the game of Root, designed by Cole Worrell, art by Kyle Farron, and published by Litter Games.
Root is a 2-4 player strategy board game of woodland warfare, where adorable critters wage a surprisingly intense battle for control of the forest. Each player leads a unique faction. The industrious Marquise de Cats build and expand, the rigid Eerie dynasties follow strict decrees to regain lost glory, and the rebellious Woodland Alliance sparks uprising, all while the solitary vagabond sneaks through the fray, trading or backstabbing at will. Every faction plays differently, but all are vying to be the first to score 30 victory points by controlling territory, crafting items, or completing unique objectives. Some can even win instantly by fulfilling bold dominance conditions. It's part war game, part puzzle, part political drama, with a very cute face. Now let's review Root.
Very nice.
Thanks, I try.
Very nice.
It's like I want to be a voice actor.
Well, Josh, welcome to the Game Table Podcast.
It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
That's right. That's right. So, as we do on this podcast, our first thing is to ask an amazing question of some kind.
A ridiculous question. I'm ready.
Yes. So, this is one. Because we're playing... In this game, you are in the woods. You're in the this world of roots.
I'm familiar with
woodlands.
Trees.
Yeah,
yes,
trees.
Yes.
If the trees in a forest could whisper secrets, what do you think they would say about the people that pass by every single day?
That guy let out a big fart as he passed by, and trust me, I just want to die. I didn't want to breathe in that CO2, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Okay, well...
Yeah, this started out great.
That's okay. Man, okay. Well, as another off-topic, but also more on-topic question, if you could be an animal, if you could have an animal as a sidekick, what animal would you choose?
As a sidekick?
Yeah, sidekick to all
like,
of your
okay,
adventures.
Wait.
You're a human being.
Okay, yes, I know. I'm a human being. I'm very disappointed that I wouldn't be the animal, because I would have totally picked a bird if I was like, oh, what kind of animal
no,
do
no,
you
no.
want to be?
No, because so we've asked that. No, we can't.
Know,
we got to try something different.
So, okay, something different.
You have a sidekick.
I have a sidekick. Am I robbing banks? Like, what am I doing as a
I don't know.
Main person? Am I a hero?
You pick.
Am I a villain?
You decide.
Okay, because if it's a villain, I'm going to be like torturing people, so I'll get an alligator. So the alligator's gonna chomp some people for sure. He's just gonna lay down those chompers real good. But if I was a good guy, I mean, I guess I would pick like, I don't know, a puppy. The puppy, you know, I'd
but
have
that's
a
not
therapy.
Menacing.
I'd have a therapy dog. That's the thing.
But how do you kill how do you beat
I'm
up
not
criminals?
Trying to kill anyone. Well, I'm a good guy. I'm trying to be I'm trying to therapize the bad guys. That's okay. That's what I'm trying to do. Social working.
I see.
Anyway.
I think I honestly don't know. I think if I were a hero, I would pick something, let's see. I want something that isn't just a therapy dog.
Oh.
I want something kind of menacing in a way. Maybe just a dog.
You really turned that on its head, didn't you, man?
No, I would actually, I think I would pick like some type of wolf. Like a
dire wolf, like the one that they just genetically made in a lab.
Yeah, that
you'd
one.
Want one of those.
Yes, I do.
Mm,
yeah,
you know
it's like I guess that's like kind of a dog, but it's not.
What would you name it?
Doug.
Doug the dog?
He's not a dog. He's a wolf. Doug the wolf.
Doug the dire wolf.
Yes. That's okay. Kind of sick, actually.
Wow. All right.
And basically, he can do my dirty work as a hero.
You hear that, Leader Games? We need a dire wolf faction right now in Root, please. And the leader has to be Doug, okay? Yes. Thank you.
That's right. All right. Well, so anyway, welcome. So one, I'll say a little quick thing here about Josh. And so one, we've been gaming for a while, multiple years now.
We've really gotten intimate at these tables for sure.
This table in particular,
yeah,
the one we're sitting at.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, we've been going to the same church for...
It's been like four years. 4 or 5 years almost.
Yep.
Since 2020. So yeah, 5 years.
That's crazy.
That?
Wow. So yeah, that's how we met. And then I started having you over for games.
Boy, that was a mistake.
Yeah, yeah, what did I do? And now he's on the podcast. So anyway, yeah, we've had a lot of fun times. It's been really fun. I enjoy gaming with you. And I thought of you when we needed, Jared's been a little busy.
Yeah. He said, let me scrape the bottom of the barrel. Oh, wait, the barrel's empty. What's the floor look like? Ah, there's Josh. All right, let's get him.
Oh, is that who that is way down there?
Is that who that is? Oh, wait. Oh, what's that on the bottom of my shoe? Josh.
That's right. So, yeah, Jared's been busy. And so, and this is a good time for him to kind of step away for just a second. And this is a good opportunity for you to step right in.
Man, this is an opportunity for many guests to make their appearance.
That's right.
Here.
That's right. Well, as we get into this, I'm going to explain the game just a little bit more. There is a lot to this game. This game is very asymmetrical. And we're going to specifically be talking about the base game, the main game. There is a lot of expansions already in this game that are for it. And we will dive into those, but I'm going to talk about what's in the core box. That's really where we're going to draw a lot of this. That's what we've played the most of. And so we're going to stick with that. And so inside that box, there are four factions. And so I'm going to give a little bit of an overview of those, but I'm going to keep it very brief. Really what I want to talk about is kind of some of the core principles of Root itself. So let's get into that. Now, in the game of Root, like Josh said, we're trying to get to 30 victory points. You will do that by playing one of these beautiful factions that are in the game. And to gain victory points, there's multiple ways to do so. Some of the major ways are by playing cards and crafting cards of specific types, and they gain you victory points immediately when crafting. The other victory points you can get is by destroying other people's buildings and other pieces. The pieces are not considered warriors. Warriors are like my warriors that I use to move around the board and all the little cute little fun warriors that there are. Those don't count towards pieces for the sake of scoring victory points. So you have to destroy other people's buildings or other people's tokens. Most of the time, it's all cardboard. So if you're killing these cardboard pieces, those score you victory points. The other way to do that is by your faction-specific ways of scoring victory points, which I'll get into just a little bit. But as an example, the birds love to build roosts. So they'll be placing roosts, and at the end of their turn, they score points based on the roosts that they have in play. So that's something that they want to score and place, and that's how they score. So every faction's different. They do a lot of different things. And so let me explain a couple more things here as we get into this. You'll have a setup that each player will place their starting factions in different parts of the board. Every faction's different. They have their own setup rules. But you'll be placed kind of out, you know, around this forest, this beautiful forest map. Once you set up that, every players will be given some cards, like I mentioned, that you'll be using to do all these fun actions and whatnot. You'll also be moving around and placing any of the other tokens that I've mentioned, buildings, tokens, roosts, and so on. Once the game is set up, the starting player will go. The basic rundown of a turn structure is usually set up in this way. Every faction's different, but it has these three major parts of a turn. You have birdsong, you have daylight, and you have evening. During birdsong, it's kind of like this kind of setup for your turn. You kind of do some fun stuff, get your faction prepped, and some factions like to do a lot during this period, and what they'll do is they'll get a ton of like resources and stuff to do things. The next thing is daylight. So this is building, moving, battling. A lot of factions like to do a lot of stuff during the daylight, but not all of them do. The next thing is evening. Evening's usually where you clean up, draw some cards, and discard. Now, there are some factions, though, that like to do a lot of things in the evening because they're like night creatures, and so they like to do a lot of their actions during the evening phase. That's the basic structure of most factions, but we'll also talk about a little bit about combat. So when you attack an opponent, and so you'll be moving these warriors that I mentioned prior, moving around the table, moving around, and you will be attacking other warriors. There are two dice. They're 12-sided, technically, but they have 0, 1, 2, and 3 icons on them, or numbers on them. Basically, when you roll to attack somebody, you use one of your actions to attack, you roll both dice, and the attacker takes the higher number, the defender takes the lower number. Let's say I roll a 3 and a 2. If I have at least 3 warriors, I'm going to do that full damage of 3 damage. If I have less than 3, then I'm not going to do the full damage, but I still take the higher number. I only deal damage of how many warriors I have that are possibly used. And as an example, if I roll a 3 and a 2 and I only have 2 warriors, I'll take the 3. That'll be my die, but I'm only going to deal 2 damage because I only have 2 warriors. The defender will now also deal damage back to me based on how many warriors they have as well. So if they only have 1 warrior and they have the 2, they're only going to deal 1 damage. But if they have the same amount of warriors as us and we roll a 3 and a 2, I would deal 2, he would deal 2, boom, boom, boom. That's how the attacking works. Most battles all work like this. There are some factions that kind of take advantage of the rolls and using some of the sides to their advantage. As an example, the woodland creatures always take the higher number, even when they're defending. So really strong at defending. These cards that I mentioned earlier, there's 4 suits: fox, rabbit, mouse, and bird. These are different suits. They all do different things. They're very specific on what type of areas they target. But in the main thing is that you'll be using them for crafting, but you'll also be using them for these abilities. There are abilities such as like removing troops, doing these really cool like bird song actions, or there's a target specific times of day that you would do something like drawing a card or removing a piece or doing these weird, funky kind of game altering abilities. The last thing inside this deck is dominance. And we did mention this prior. Dominance cards is an alternate win condition. You can play this card and it requires you to control specific parts of the board for you to win. You no longer can win the game the normal way. So you have to be very careful when taking this card because you are forfeiting the ability to win by 30 points and now you will only win by domination, which is very specific board control. Again, player who gets to 30 points or if they win using the dominance card will end the game immediately as soon as you hit the 30 points. Or when you have a dominance card, it's at the beginning of your turn. If you fulfill the dominance condition, then you would win. So that's kind of the basic rundown there. The last thing I want to mention is because we're talking about the core box. Let's talk just very briefly about the main aspects. Marquis the Cat, which are the beautiful cat creatures, is basically you're going to be placing wood around the board. And they like wood for some reason, and they will use this wood to build up their army. They have a ton of troops on the board. They start out with all over the board. They have 25 people warriors to start. They basically can move really well. They can attack. They're called a militant faction, which means they really like to attack. The Eerie Dynasty, which is birds. I mentioned before, they have a decree. They have to follow that decree perfectly. They have specific actions that they have to take that follows that decree. They are really good. Also, another militant faction. They have to follow these actions accordingly. They can move and battle like anybody else, but their main thing is they want to build roosts all over the board and build up the dynasty of the Eerie and control the game of Root. Last thing, I'll get to one more, but the Woodland Alliance, which we've kind of talked about, they are like, I don't know if they're going to like me saying this, they're basically the Rebel Alliance of...
That makes sense to me, yeah.
They're the Rebel Alliance of Root, and basically they're sowing sympathy throughout the board, and they're just putting these tokens out everywhere, sowing sympathy, and then they revolt, and they build a base, and then they become unstoppable, and they blow up the Death Star. Oh, I'm sorry,
Wrong franchise.
Yes, anyway, super cute. They're one of my favorites. Last thing is the Vagabond. He is literally one piece
This man's playing Legend of Zelda while everybody else is playing RTS strategy. Yes, that's what he's
exactly.
doing.
So the Vegabond is literally, he goes in between the forests and he crafts little items and he builds a satchel full of items and then he basically deals out cards to all the players and gets points. So
this man's a menace.
He is a menace. He can attack really well as well. But he only has one warrior. Like, it's not even a warrior. He has one like leader and he has no warriors. It's just him.
Nope. He's just running around. It's just him.
Just
one
him.
Guy.
So that's kind of a basic rundown. We'll definitely be talking about more of these as we get into this, but we'll head back on over to the table here and talk about what we like. Well, that was a lot.
So much.
It is a lot.
And it's a lot more if you're sitting at the table looking at the piles of plastic bags and just amounts of iconography
and
text and everything.
There's a lot of text. This game,
it's intimidating.
This game can be intimidating
at first.
At first. I will say this is like basically when you play, you don't have to worry about all of the other people's abilities. Like the subtleties of their factions, you don't have to worry about. That's not something you need to focus on. You want to focus on your own. And so you're kind of given this board. These player boards are fantastic.
Oh, 100%.
They are
super. I could not play this game if I did not have a player board.
If you just had to remember what you did.
Yes, I could not.
No. So every player board for all the different factions has their own rules. How your turn structure works, because every player's turn structure is different, technically. They all do different things. And so, like, your birdsong might literally... So, like, I'm looking at the cats now. The birdsong for the cats is just place one wood. The birdsong for, like, everybody else is at least two other actions. And the birdsong for the Woodland Alliance, they basically, like, do most of their work during birdsong. So this very, very asymmetrical game. When I sit down to teach this, this is the worst experience ever.
Oh, yeah.
Is I basically have to learn four separate games.
Yeah,
and the subtleties of all the four games.
And that's not even including the expansions, because then you get into the expansions and you're like, well, I have to learn like eight different factions and how the nuance of each one and how they operate.
It's basically eight games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, but with that, the player board and how those all work together. One, let's scratch the surface a little bit here. Once you get into the game and once you understand what your faction does for a game, what just blows you away and what makes you enjoy this game the most when you pick a faction and you're rocking it.
What makes me enjoy this game way more than literally any other board game is the asymmetry with each character, I guess each faction that you're playing as, because they're so unique and it makes sense with each one on how they operate as like kind of I'm a big story guy. And so whenever I'm looking at the story of each one of these characters or their attributing alliance and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And how they operate with their turn operation. Sure. It's like, it's a lot at first where it's like, oh, well, I'm the cats. All I have to do is get some wood in the beginning of my turn. And then I have all these things that I can do with that wood or what I want to do. And it's because the cats they set up a kingdom. And so they're all spread out throughout this like woodland land. So it's like, they're the people in power. But then slowly as the game goes on, you see the story unfold of like, okay, we got people revolting against the cats who are in power.
Exactly.
And then it's like, oh, the Eerie Dynasty is trying to come back and they were actually the ruling power. So they're trying to get control again.
Exactly.
And then it's like, oh, wait, but the Woodland Alliance doesn't like either of them. And so the Woodland Alliance is trying to like...
The Woodland Alliance
stoke the
hates
flame
everybody.
Between both of them. And then the Vagabond's just like, I'm chilling, drinking some tea and I'm going in these relics and these little ruins and stuff, man. So I really enjoy the story of each faction and then the art just pops off of each of these player mats so well.
Absolutely.
And it makes me think of like ye old like fable stories from the early English or like Robin Hood-esque kind
Absolutely.
Of stuff.
It's got this knight feeling to it.
Yeah. And yeah, it's very Renaissance, very medieval, very
or even like this. A lot of the Vegabond has these like literally like King Arthur vibe, like he's like going against the world.
Yes. And so the art it's very cartoony. It's very kid friendly, but this is not, I would not say this is like a kid game.
It is not a kid's
game. This is a lot of strategy, a lot of, like mechanics that are all working together seamlessly that it's hard to comprehend as like anybody who's below the age of 10.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But when you see it all like come together into like the 2+ hour kind of game,
it's a magical story, isn't it?
It's fun. It is a magical fairy tale.
So that, no, you make a good point. So the base game does an excellent job of building and kind of Josh kind of went through it there. This lore of the game of Root. There is a lore like of this world that has been created. The lore is like the Marquise de Cat owns the forest, but the Iri dynasty wants to take it back because they're the ones that owned it, you know, generations ago. And yeah, the Vegabond's just chilling. Like he just went,
he's like, let me drink my Root tea. Yes. I'm just enjoying my time vibing.
Yeah. And then the Woodland Alliance is fed up with being suppressed and they're rising up and revolting. So that's the story. That's this world. And when I first played this game, I was actually, was able to play this at Fun K-Town, which most recent episode we have talked about Fun K-Town.
Well.
But this gentleman with one of the game stores there was there. He had a copy and he explained it and taught all of us, Jared, me and both of our wives, at who Anna and Julia. Julia's not been on the podcast for a while. So anyway.
Oh, poor Julia.
Yeah, I know. But he explained each faction. Each faction he explained, but he started with that pitch, the lore. And it was just drew everybody into the table. And so that was such an excellent way of really, because when you stare at the board and it's all set up, it's a little, like you said, it's daunting.
It's intimidating.
When somebody teaches you and they give you this lore, it kind of opens your mind. For me, it opened my mind a little bit of like, okay, everything is thematic in this game. The way each faction works is very thematic with the type of creature they are and the lore that has been created for them.
When a board game pitches to me with its story, this is why I love 40K.
Yeah.
I love Warhammer 40K. I love strategy games. So anything that's like Warhammer or Battletech or things that are like big wargaming kind of stuff, they are enriched in lore. And so you can just get lost with hours and hours of like
Absolutely.
Books and TV shows and all of this stuff that just entraps you into this world. And so Root gives me a sample of that where it's like, hey, you know, we invite you into the story. Like I said, it's like a fable and they play on that because fables in literary terms, they are use animals as kind of their main teaching points as their characters. And so this is a whole game about animal characters. And
exactly.
So it's very fable-esque and that it just entices people to play it and enjoy the story and then get lost in their own faction story and actually kind of root for this person to win the game. No pun intended, but that just kind of happened.
Exactly. So you mentioned the art. So the art is by Kyle Farron. We've talked about him on the podcast prior. He has done one Root, but he has also done Fort. And so he's done other games. He's done all the games by Letter Games or Leader Games, however
you
want.
Is that the snowball one, Fort?
That's the one where you're building forts with as your kids.
Oh, yes.
You played that one,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, yes,
yeah. So same art. This guy I love. And so I will only rave about him just all the time. He's fantastic. I love all of their games because they're asymmetrical. But he just brings this flavor and a culture, and he brings that lore to this game. Like, it would not be the same if the art didn't, like, reciprocate that lore. Mm. Like, it needs to be in sync with it. He does such a fantastic job creating this world here.
I mean, I I'm just looking at the little player boards that we have in front of us. Like, I'm looking at the cats right now, and you can see just there's so much character
Absolutely.
In each little cat where it's like, oh, they're a little mischievous. They kind of don't take themselves so seriously, or they do take themselves seriously, but nobody else takes them seriously. They're kind of funny. And and so you can just see the character just kind of pop off of these boards whenever you're reading about you know, what they're doing, where they're from, and what they're trying to do to accomplish their goals. I mean, even the Woodland Alliance, like, they look kind of sick. Like, they're rebels. They're wanting to go against
they have no armor. They're just scrounging up as much as they can from the forest.
And the Eerie Dynasty is just kind of like, they're very, like,
well-kept, put-together
aristocracy kind of thing. So it's just the art just emphasizes that story way more, which is great.
It is. So because we can't sit here and talk about...
I know, the art.
I could talk about the art.
The art all day.
I guess we shouldn't talk about that either. What I was going to say is we can't talk about each individual faction for, like, forever. We could.
Good.
We could do that.
We really could.
But we're not going to. What we need to do is what I want to ask you is let's start here. Do you have a favorite faction that you've played?
Favorite faction so far is definitely the Vagabond, just because of how much of a wrench he can throw into any situation. Especially when those dominance cards come out. So when a dominance card is played, the Vagabond can form an alliance with the person who played that dominance card. And so then it's like, oh, hey, I'm on your side. Let me give you some items or some cards really quick. If you give me some items.
Exactly.
And so then he kind of attaches, or he has to attach himself, and then he's stuck with that player for the rest of the game.
Yeah, so his score piece just goes on top of it.
Yep.
And he just moves with him.
Yeah,
for the rest of the-
and so he becomes part of, let's say it's the Eerie Dynasty who plays the dominance card. Like, he just becomes part of the Eerie Dynasty.
Yep.
And now we got this Vagabond that's tagging along with us, helping us out.
Exactly.
Which really does change the dynamics of the table, because now it's, okay, so the Eerie Dynasty and Vagabond are together. Rebel Alliance, we got to help out the cats so that they don't win, kind of thing. And so it's very fun to see politics at the table.
It is.
In strategy war games kind of stuff, because it starts out, everybody's at each other's throats and they don't know how this is going to play out eventually. But then you get into like turn five, turn six, you see who's understanding the board
developing.
And see who's the biggest threat. It's the same thing
in
Magic the Gathering whenever you're playing that card game. I don't know if you like that card game. You probably don't.
I played it.
Okay.
You said
you've just tainted this podcast Magic the Gathering.
No. We've talked about some card games.
But that's it's big in any TCG game where it's like, hey, this is the biggest threat on the table. Let's deal with this guy first. Then
Absolutely.
We can hash it out ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's just fun to see that interplay happen.
And I don't think, as in some other games that I have played, it's not. When somebody deals with the threat on the board, it's not. It's mean because obviously you have to take care of them, but it's not aggressively mean, in my opinion, compared to a game like Arx, which is another game by Leader Games. That game is incredibly mean. This is not mean. I think that you will have handled in a region, one of the forest, and you handle like the threat, and then you move on because your goal is to not just go around and kill things. Your goal is to control the board and score points.
And even if, I guess, you get completely wiped off the board, maybe that's the worst for, like, the cats, probably, because they would have to... They need to get wood in order to, like, supply their stuff. So
any of the factions, the cats do get wrecked. So the cats start out with the most pieces on the board.
Right.
They almost have all their pieces on the board. They start in basically a couple areas, and then they put like one warrior all around because they rule the forest to start the game. And so everybody has to kind of take it from them. But even with that, every one of the factions, if your pieces get all removed from the board, there's a little, I wouldn't call it a catch up mechanic. It's like a startup mechanic.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, your pop-up shop.
Mm.
I think the cats, basically, they can place like a warrior and then one of their buildings and then place a wood.
So it is very forgiving. It's not like, all my pieces are gone. I'm out of the game for the rest of the time kind of thing.
You just got to sit
on your thumbs. But instead, there is that kind of recovery mechanic that you can have to get back into the game and actually start swinging some more.
Exactly. I would say, as far as for me, I would say... I like the Woodland Alliance, I think, the best so far.
They're intimidating. Both them and the Eerie Dynasty are very intimidating for me.
But it's in different ways.
Yes.
So the Eerie Dynasty starts as a flock in one corner. They have 12, I think. They start with
They have an army
of birds that literally just flocks to one corner of the board.
Birds of a feather flock together. it's
right. Where the Woodland Alliance starts with, there is not a single piece that starts on the board for setup. Not a single one.
All in the underground.
Yeah. So they're working this underground sympathy that they're sowing amongst the woodland, the unrepresented woodland creatures. And so I love them because how many warriors do they have?
They only have 10.
Yeah, 10. Everybody else has it. So
you have to be extremely strategic with these guys and where you're sowing sympathy and where you're causing uprisings, because uprisings can destroy the other players' pieces that are in that area.
Exactly.
And so you have to be like methodical of like, okay, when am I going to start this, what is it, the mechanic called whenever they burst the
revolt?
A clearing.
Yeah.
Like you have to be very methodical with
you
that.
You have to.
Because if you do it too soon, well, everybody's going to know, and they're going to know that, you're blowing up this clearing. We got to take you out, kind of thing.
Blow you up with the Death Star of the birds.
That's why I'm very intimidated by, no, not the Death Star. Why are we going to the Star Wars? I don't understand. That's why I'm very intimidated by the Woodland Alliance. The Eerie Dynasty is mechanically difficult.
Yeah.
Just because I don't like to be confined in a box. And so
they have to check the box.
Fine oiled machined box that you have to follow or else you're going into turmoil.
Your leader will fall apart.
Yes, and your leader falls apart.
The dynasty will collapse.
And I don't like that. I like being given options. So
the one thing, what I truly love about the Woodland Alliance is that you are sowing this sympathy around, like you said, and you have to know when to strike. It is all about timing. And because you only have 10 warriors, what's even worse than one just having the 10 warriors is that you also have to split them between warriors on the board and then officers. Because as an alliance of rebels, everybody does both jobs. There's not enough troops. So the officers are warriors and the warriors are officers. And you're doing this, you only have 10. And relatively speaking, you need some to be in the office and be the officers. So you probably have 3 or 4 of them. But then you only have 6. You have 6 warriors on the board.
They're not a good fighting force.
No.
They're not like raw combat kind of people.
No.
But they can be surprise attack people.
They can.
So that's really, and another intimidating thing about them is you have to plan your surprise attacks beforehand and anticipate where the Eerie Dynasty is going to move all of their mountains of birds
across. You're just trying to hide in a
way. Yeah, you're trying to hide in the meantime until they get distracted by either the vagabond or the cat just for a little while. Then you can start revolting in there to kind of take a lot of their pieces away. And so good on you for enjoying them so much.
If you pull a revolt, I pulled a revolt off once and I think I destroyed pieces from all the other people.
It was aggravating as a vagabond.
Yes. And so that's the timing there. And again, they score their point. Like you said, they score their points based off the sympathy they have out. The more sympathy they get out, the more points they're scoring. And so it's like a bit, you want to create this ramp with them. The one thing I will say is like, they're called an insurgent faction. There's militant and then insurgents. Insurgents are what the word says is they're slowly working in the underground. They're not going around just blowing up everything they can. They want to be very secret and targeted and strategic in their movement and in how they're building their landscape. Where the insurgents just run around and pillage and destroy the forest. So those are our favorites. I like all of them. I like the Vagabond as well. The Eerie Dynasty are, I think, also great. I love building that kind of decree, which is awesome. And then the cats have their own. They just want to build all their different buildings. They have, I believe they have wood mills. They have not wood mills. They have sawmills, workshops, and recruiter stations?
Yes, recruiters.
So basically, they're building these buildings to maintain their industry of what?
Their industry of feline supremacy.
Exactly. So
as a person who hasn't, I mean, I've only played this game like maybe 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And the first time this game was introduced to me, I was, of course, I was drawn by everything.
Yeah.
But man, was I intimidated by just the amount of information that was coming my way at start. And so the dude that showed me the game, he said, hey, just play as the cats.
Yeah.
And these are kind of the most mainstream.
They're very straightforward.
They're very straightforward.
And you start out with a lot of presence on the board. So that's why it makes it really easier for a new player.
So they're a very good starting faction. If this is the first time that you're ever playing the game and you go over and you're like, we're playing Root. I don't really know how to play this game. Yeah. Just stick with the cats.
Yeah.
The cats have, like you said, a lot of board presence, a lot of way to kind of get some attacks out at first just to kind of get used to the game.
Exactly.
And I, as I'm looking at these, I kind of noticed some similarities of how the, like, mechanically people are getting victory points, like putting out the sympathy or putting out roosts or putting out your buildings. And so for the cats, building as much as you can is very important, especially recruiters, so that you can get more of those cats on
the
board. And playing as the cats reminds me of like a good old fashioned RTS strategy, like Age of Empires kind of stuff. And so
You're just building up an army, baby.
I do like playing as the cats just to kind of bully some people every now and then to just push them around and be like, Woodland Alliance, stay down.
Well, that's what you can do, because you always have, like, you have so many warriors just spread out among the board. Like, you can be like, I don't like that token there. I'm going to go kill it.
It's only a problem when the Eerie Dynasty think they're too big for the britches and they like just march in with 8,000 troops and your little like three felines in a clearing are like, oh, we can't deal with this. No, please. And they die immediately.
They pick up your troops and pick them and like fly them away. Take them to the roost.
No.
Yep. So, yeah, man. So that's, those are like the basic ones, I guess. Is there anything you want to add to like what you really enjoy about any specific faction or on what ability you like most as far as anything like that?
Well, I just find it fascinating that out of all the base factions, it's only the Vagabond that can align himself with other factions.
Right.
Like, I've really been looking at this this other board game that came out in the 1970s. It's based on Dune.
Okay.
It is Dune, the board game that came out in the 70s. But then it had resurgence by Gale Force 9, I think is the company that released it again in 2019 for the movie. They have a lot of like asymmetrical kind of abilities that you can do on the board.
Yeah, I've seen this one.
But they have a big like alliance system that pops up. And so I just really enjoy systems like that where you don't have to be enemies with everybody at the table.
Right.
You can choose the biggest threat on the table as a Vagabond and be like, I want to be your friend because I know that I have a better chance of winning if I become your friend. And they have a very good system of getting more victory points the more allied that you are.
The more you give things to them.
And so it's good because, okay, I'm getting a benefit by cozying up with the biggest threat. And if he happens to pull that dominance card, then I can also win with him kind of thing. But you're just schmoozing off of his winnings and his earnings and kind of scraping off of that.
Exactly.
As you're going around. And the Vagabond just has a cool little adventure going on with himself, with the items that he has and how he can do his actions. He's just super unique in comparison to the other three starting factions. And that just kind of draws me to him a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I think he does something different. They all do something different, but he does something very different. And so, I want to say this. So he gives cards to other players. In return, he takes crafted items from them. They do not, it's not reciprocal. He could just do it. He could just like, take my stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this hammer and
he's
walk away.
He's a little thief sometimes.
Yes, he's thieving even though
he's
giving.
But then he's like, oh, I'm so allied with you. I took all your stuff.
I took
your
all your cards. So you don't have a choice in receiving the cards.
But also, as the other factions, you have no use for these items besides trading them with the Vagabond. And so is it really like a net negative? Like, it's mainly a net positive whenever you're just getting these free cards from the Vagabond.
Exactly.
But he's sneaking around as a Vagabond just waiting to stab you in the back. So you better watch out for him.
And I want to clarify exactly how. So the dominance card has to be out. He activates the dominance card, but he just removes it from play, basically. And then he forms the coalition and places his score marker on that player's marker. So he's not winning the game via dominance. He's just removing the dominance card and then just coalition with that player.
Oh, but the player still needs to do the dominance. In
no,
order-
the player just has to get 30 points. Or if they do dominance, I think that's...
I remembered that incorrectly.
No, no, that you had me questioning. I was trying to remember exactly how it worked. But basically, so then he basically removes the domination card from the game and becomes a coalition. So
it just becomes race to the 30.
Basically,
then,
yeah.
Still.
But okay. He's helping him.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Oh, so, I see. So any points he earns goes towards the coalition.
Yeah, so it's... Okay. Yes, exactly. It's a coalition. So...
Very, yes, very interesting. And so that, like I said, it changes the whole table dynamics where now the other two are kind of teaming up where they're wanting to knock down the Vagabond and his coalition.
And the way... The last caveat to that is they have to team up with the player that's in last.
Oh, they can't team up with...
They can't be the first play. Now, if it's all like 15, 14, 13, you could pick the 13. Okay, so what ends up happening is, because I've won the game doing this, you coalition with the player that you know is definitely the strongest, but they're just not in first place right now. Mm. And so this has to be after, I think, 10 victory points have been scored by everybody, basically, because that's when the dominance cards are active. But so you still team up with who you think's going to win.
Wow. You know, it's just these little things that you kind of forget whenever you don't play in a while.
There's a lot. There's a lot in the game. And so I am always referring to the book, which...
The law,
which there is an actual, like, reference. There's a rules reference, which
there's
is absolutely...
There's actual amendments and constitutions,
yes,
and ministries.
Exactly.
And everything in the
and
law.
And it's called the Law of Root. And that's literally the booklet that they give you. It has everything in there. It has references. It has an appendix. It's great. I always refer to the Law of Root. It's great. And they do update it, which is kind of cool. They make amendments, so... All right. So we've talked about what we absolutely adore of this cute
game.
There's
a lot to adore of this cute game.
Is there anything that you're like, I really don't like this?
Okay. As much as I love asymmetry, this is a lot of different rules for each like unique faction.
Yeah.
And it's to its strength, but it's also to its detriment because even when we were playing the other night, I'm trying to pay attention to what my faction does. Okay, how does my faction uniquely operate?
Yeah.
And then we got other people on the table who are playing with other new factions that I also want to keep track of.
Yeah.
Because I want to know what you're doing during your daylight hour or your daylight phase and how you're kind of refreshing yourself in Birdsong. But then I'm also paying attention, okay, to the original, the original characters and how they operate again. And I don't want to make sure to benefit that player. And so it's a lot of it's a lot of mechanics to keep track of.
It's
and
really
so
hard.
You do have to refer back to the rule book so many times over or refer back to your board just so many times over. There's just a lot of text to kind of swim through.
There is a lot of text to swim through. And to piggyback off that, I would say that as somebody that is trying to keep, as in most games that I'm playing, I'm trying to be the game master and make sure everybody's playing their faction correctly. I also miss stuff on my own faction board, and so I'm missing thing. I'm like, I so in a game that we played, like I wasn't placing pieces when I should have been. And then I had to go back. I had to undo something I did because I did it incorrectly. And so these are like easily when you're also like you're learning your own faction, and then you're also trying to make sure like everybody's still like flowing in the game correctly. So you're making sure everybody is following their rules correctly on their own player board.
And the overview cards that are included with the factions are very helpful in like how kind of you should play.
Yeah.
But there are just times where I miss actions.
Yeah.
Where I was paying attention to trying to do this one thing with my character the other night. I'm like, okay, make sure that I give cards here and make sure that I actually like do this action to move here. And then do this one thing and then do this one thing. When little do I know that I could do this multiple times and that would have changed really a big outcome of the game.
Yeah.
If I knew that, oh, I can do these multiple actions so many times over. And so it's just, it's a lot to keep track of and get lost with.
You do.
Especially if you're a first time player.
Yeah.
Like coming to this game.
I try to be very gracious, especially when we have multiple people, even if they played the game before, to playing a new faction, because you're like, shoot, I did that backwards, or I was supposed to be able to move again. As long as it's not going to absolutely break the game, I'm usually, if it's still your turn, I'm like, you know, you did it out of order and you didn't know, or you forgot and you're still learning.
Yeah, you get like two mulligans.
Yeah, I try to be very lenient because I would want the same when I'm trying to learn.
Right,
because it's like, no matter, unless you've played this game 8 times and played each individual one every time, you don't remember everything about your... I've played the same faction twice and I missed stuff the second time I played it. I didn't play it perfectly. And so unless you're playing this game all the time, there's just a lot of rules, specific rules to your faction that you might miss and you want to be careful of. And so I just try to keep that in mind, is like when we're all learning a faction, it's like, you know, let's just keep an eye on each other. And if you miss something, let me know on your turn. Like, you know, we'll try and fix it the best we can.
Yeah. There is some downtime as well whenever people are trying to learn these mechanics of their unique faction.
Some factions take longer turns than others.
Some factions do take longer turns than others. And so you're kind of like sitting around. But that also is okay because you're also strategizing during that time.
Yeah.
And so you're really trying to plan, okay, what am I going to do during my next bird song to kind of refresh myself, and how am I going to move about? And it is a lot like chess, where you have to pay attention to where your opponents are moving.
Absolutely.
Anyway. And so it's fine with the amount of downtime, but I just wish it was a little bit quicker, or if I could interact somehow with other factions during my downtime so that I could still kind of be in play.
Yeah, because even when somebody attacks you, unless you have a specific card, Ambush, that you would play at a turn, there's a couple other cards you can keep in front of you that like prevent damage or something like that. But there's not anything you are actively doing on other people's turns. You're not rolling the dice. Like, you just take the hits and kind of react to it. One of the otters is in the Riverfolk expansion, they can trade with other people's outside of their turn, but they don't pick what they're trading them. They just basically take a card and then you give the otters.
Right.
So there's no active choice happening there. So yeah, you're right. There can be a lot of downtime. I don't think it's excessive. I think it's...
Well, it's very surprising because we played a 2.5 hour game and it flew by. Like, I feel like
maybe, the Eerie Dynasty.
Maybe we did 8 turns? 9? Maybe?
I think... So, people are crazy. This game has a lot. There's a lot of people that are just diehards of this game. I think they have it all broken down of how much an average game, like how many turns you get. I think it is like 9 or 10.
Well, there we go.
And you have to, they have it broken down on like how many points like you'll need to score in excess to what you score from your board, your specific faction. So you got to figure out like 12 points from cards or destroying things, or like every faction has a breakdown. Like, this game has so many diehards in it, and I love it. I think it's awesome. But there's resources galore, like all through Board Game Geek on all the files. They have it all broken down. I think it's awesome because for a game, these factions are hard to play. They can be, and to be good at it. And so I think it's helpful when you have all these resources. But like you're saying, we played for 2.5 hours. 10 turns. That's all you get. So, you got to make do with what you got.
I know. Yeah. So you do have to make the most of your turn, which means, and it is intimidating for me, where it's like, I have to strategize so much so that I make the most of my turn. And it really hurts whenever you, I forgot that I could do this many actions, or I forgot that I could do this action, or I forgot I could do that kind of thing. So it really hurts when that happens. And it is hard to recover from that because everybody else is keeping track. Everybody else is ever able to like get their stuff on the board and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm being very particular because of my gameplay style the other night. But now that I know my downfalls, I can play even better next time.
Well, that's the thing. I was the Vagabond the first game I played, and it took me the whole game to figure out what the heck he does. And I almost won. I almost did a coalition with the Woodland Alliance to win. I was one turn short. I was like, I got to do it. I got to do it. And then I didn't do it. And I think it's because I honestly forgot. Because I, you know, you forget.
Yep.
And so I was due to the game and I forgot that, oh, I wanted to do that in my turn. And I didn't. And that player ended up winning. And I was like, oh my God, I could have like won my game.
Tragic.
But anyway, it happens. You just forget things and that's okay. Like, I think if you give that grace for yourself, this game is so rewarding in so many other ways of being good at your faction and the combos and the, like, I've lost more games than I've won and I have fun really equally the same. Like, it is just so good.
And it, because each faction is unique, you want to come back to play another faction.
Yeah.
You want to come back to be like, okay, they won with that faction and they were doing that super cool thing in order to move across the board. I want to learn how to play like that. And so then, you know, I played as the cats the first time I played and I saw how the vagabond was like moving around and he was slipping into the forest and he was getting the ruins. And then he was like, oh, I'm going to coalesce with these guys. I'm going to be on their team. And it's like, what? I kind of want to do that. And so that enticed me to play as the vagabond, who also has different character cards that you can choose to have like preset abilities and stuff like that, which is very cool. And so it's very neat. And then you learn about the expansions and the different kinds of other unique mechanics that are included in the different factions that are expanded upon. And it's like, I just want to keep coming back to this game and always. I want to keep playing as the different faction at a different time. Even though that I enjoy playing as the Vagabond or I enjoy playing as the Keepers in Iron, I want to come back and play as a different one so I can learn their mechanics.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the expansion. So I want to briefly talk about that stuff. So
the Otters suck. All right. The Otters are absolute slave traders and they deserve to burn. Okay. They're terrible.
They just stole all your people. So the first expansion that came out was honestly like right after the game came out. So Root came out in 2018. The Riverfolk expansion came out also in like 2018. But that has the Otters and the Lizards. The next expansion was the Underworld, which has the Corvid Conspiracies and the Underground Duchies. That one's the one I don't own, but I have played one of them. And then there's a bunch of other expansions which are like clockwork, so it allows you to play with like AI basically. Characters that are, they kind of move around and moving around the board and kind of, if you wanted to fill out, you know, player spots. Then you have the Marauders, which comes with the Badgers,
the Keepers in Iron,
and then the Rats, which are called, wait, what is their name? They are called the Lord of a Hundreds.
Ah.
Because there's like a million of them.
Yes.
Hundreds of rats.
So many of them.
So they love to just beat up people.
I am not excited to play against those guys.
Yeah, the rats are really annoying. I've played against them. They're really fun. And so I will say this, is that I think the Riverfolk adds a good, like the Lizards and the Otters, I think they're... well, they're called the Riverfolk Company and then the Lizard Cult. So anyway, but they add a nice little like next step of a little bit. There's a little bit more subtlety on how your actions work. When you get into the next two expansions, they really dive into like, okay, we're going to score a totally different way.
Yeah.
So like you were playing the Keepers in Iron, like they score by just collecting a bunch of relics.
Basically. Yeah. It wasn't, I could still get some points by destroying other people's
buildings and crafting cards
and stuff. But my main way, instead of building out or building roosts or building buildings, anything like that, my main way was I had to cut. It's kind of like a mix of the Vagabond where I had to go and delve into forests in order to get ruins. And then I had to take these ruins back to my build. It's like, I'm like the crusaders that are going for holy relics.
That's right. Exactly.
And I'm trying to caravan them back to my holy church in order to, I guess, give them to the Badger God or something
God.
So, yeah, I don't know. He sings that YouTube video over and over and over again. That's what he does.
So, yeah, the expansions, they get even more complicated. And some of the Underground basically adds a new map It adds a lake map and then an underground map, which the basically the moles.
Which expansion has the snow map?
That's part of the base game.
So the
base
is?
Yeah, so the base game has a main forest board, but it also has a winter forest board that you basically change the regions. All of the there's three different regions on the board. It's the different suits of the cards, excluding birds. So it's your fox, mouse, and
rabbit.
Bunny or rabbit. So yellow, orange, and red. And so you would just shuffle them around the board. It's just a board variability. And a lot of people do like that one. And then there's the lake and the underground. It has tunnels that you can make. And then there is another expansion coming out later this year, which is called the Homeland expansion. It has bats and frogs.
Ooh.
The Lily Pad Dissapora, and then the Twilight Council. Which is the bat. Ugh,
of course they had to do Twilight.
Yeah,
you
so
know,
I'm looking
vampires.
Forward to being the bats.
So do you know what specific like unique niche that the bats have? Or
I don't. I think they have prototypes you can print out or print and play stuff.
Ah.
I haven't done. I have just not spoiled anything. I've been too busy.
Okay.
Just send it to me. It's fine. Mm. They also actually, they're adding the Knaves of Deepwood. And so basically what you'll do is you'll use the Vegabond pieces and have an army of them, I think is the vibe.
An army of vagabonds?
So you use them and then these other
They're
pieces.
They're unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is the thought process there. You're using them as an army.
Okay.
But I'm not super familiar with how that expansion is. I haven't done a whole lot, but frogs and bats and then knaves. So for
knaves.
Anyway,
so, are they horses?
No. So anyway, game is 2 to 4 player for the base. If you get some of the expansions, you can make it 1 player and play against the, you know, some robots.
Which that's cool.
You can play up to 6 players. Which would be...
that's terrifying.
I mean, the board is already really tight on a four-player
game.
Even
with
but...
just 4 players, you're going 2.5 hours. So
yeah.
If you add 2 more, it's an epic game.
You're
going
to at least be there for 3.5. I think it would add an hour, at least. I think 3.5, if everybody knew what they were doing, I think you could do it. I did hear it was an absolutely epic way to play. It's not something... there's a guy I was talking to, he really liked it. Just not something you would do all the time.
Oh.
So.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. Yeah. Now, we're talking about a time commit. I would say if you're teaching new people, it's going to be 3 hours at least.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we played, 2.5? Was it 2.5?
It was 2.5.
Playing?
And we played with 2 new factions. I was learning a new faction. You were learning a new faction. We kind of had an understanding of base rules, though.
Yeah.
And then we had a friend, Drew, who was playing the faction he played with last time. And then we had your brother, who was playing with the Woodland Alliance.
And he hadn't played with them before.
Nope.
So we did have 3 people learning new factions.
Yes. And honestly, it was 2.5 hours. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't because we already played the base version. We had a good grasp of the basic rules. We knew that we just had to refer to our player mats so often,
yeah,
because that would explain what we would do during our turn order the best.
Exactly. So. But overall, you're going to look, I would say if you're teaching a whole table of new people, I would say probably a 4-hour chunk you're going to have to explain each thing for at least 10 minutes. You might be able to do a 5 to 10 minute teach per player, but you're going to commit to that. You can prep. There's a lot of videos on, and that's how I sent when I first taught this game. I sent a video to each player on what faction they were going to play. And there's tons of videos on how to play individual factions, strategies. I sent that to them at least to like for them. They're like hearing the terminology of this, of their faction a lot. And then I explain it again. It helps them kind of get locked into the what they're trying to do. So.
And if you're a video gamer as well as a board gamer,
oh, yeah.
they have a root video game on Steam and on mobile that you can play. And so that has a really fun tutorial mechanics, so you can learn each faction individually.
And then you
can buy all of the factions that they sell as the board game, which is super cool. And then you can learn each one and you can play locally and online as well. So if you're a video gamer, then you can do
that
as well.
Yeah. There you go. So another way to learn the game, obviously I like physical cards and stuff, but I did play it. It's
tactile.
Cute. They do a similar art style, like as best they can. It's cute. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, yeah, it's light. It's good. So, all right. Well, the last thing we want to do is grade.
Grade.
Oh. So on the podcast here, Josh, we do a grading scale of 0 to 10.
Okay.
And
has anything ever gotten a 0?
No,
just curious.
Jared's gotten close.
Ah, y'all have been nice.
he gave one.
I would have given negative numbers.
Yeah, no, we don't do negative. I guess 1 to 10, but
okay.
I mean, yeah, 0. I don't.
Do y'all go on halves?
We do halves.
Okay,
you could do point. We can do 2.5.
Okay. Oh, all right.
I would say, 2.5. would be
don't go any further down the decimal range.
Yeah, no more decimals besides that. Yeah, no, let's not do that. So I would say, just give me what you're as far
are
as
we given an overall or specific things.
Yeah,
or?
No, just do an overall of how you would rate this game. And on as far for you, like what you love it as a game itself, the amount of fun you have with it. I'm going to say this now, this game is not for everybody. So that just goes without saying. For yourself, though, what do you like?
For me, for what I like in board games, this is definitely a 9. This is definitely up there for me.
Nice.
Even though that there's not even that much iconography because I play Tiny Epic board games, and those are deep with iconography.
They do. They are.
Like,
they are
so heavy with iconography. So that's fine with me. I can deal with that. And the text is fine. They make it very easy on the eyes to digest what you're doing for each phase of your turn. Even though each is different for each faction, it's fine. You can understand it. I can understand it because I like to play strategy games a lot. So, I would say yes, 9. For the pros, they outweigh the cons so much, and I always have a good time at the table whenever I'm playing Root, and it's just fun to see the table dynamics. It's fun to see the politics going on, and then it's also fun as a aggressive faction to just wipe pieces off of the board.
That's right,
and so that's why I always like to play as the aggressive factions. But a solid 9 for me.
Nice. I will reciprocate that.
What?
And
we're matching?
Raise you 1.
What? You're giving it a 10?
No, no.
Oh.
I'm going to give it a 9.5.
You you went it's almost perfect.
So I've given a couple. Well, actually, I know I've given a 10 out of this on the podcast. The one thing I'm not going to give this a 10 is because I'm the one who has to teach it every time.
Oh.
And it's like a fault because it's so great.
It's so epic.
Is that I just don't, when I think of a 10 game, it's like something I definitely want to play every single day. I don't know if I want to do this every single day because it is exhausting to have to teach somebody, especially if they're new. So I'm going to give it, that's just going to knock it down to 0.5 for me. I do think this game is perfectly designed. They have thought through every detail of this. It is crazy, the design work on this. I love the art. I love all the mechanics on how attacking works. It's simple. Like, I know we've talked about a lot of different things. Overall, the way you move in battle, which is a ton of this game, and playing cards, like you play cards based on what you own on the board. That's really simple, but it starts to get really complicated based on the actual factions itself. But the core principles of Root are relatively easy. Moving, attacking, and playing cards are pretty simple. Like, you move to and from what you already own, and you roll some dice when attacking, and you just deal the damage that's rolled.
It's just when you get into the nuance of, okay, how do I do that? And how do I earn my points? And what kind of wrenches can I throw in situations in order
it
to...
It just becomes this whole...
Screw up scenarios.
Ball of fun and chaos.
And cute...
And cute...
Cutthroat...
Yeah.
...battles, indeed.
Exactly. So there's some hidden layers as you play. And every game I've had, it's just peeling back another layer of this game.
So a solid A minus, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, like, 9.5.
Okay, so like solid A, not A plus, just A. Okay.
Yeah, we're doing, nice. We don't do letters.
We're doing number conversions
even though
to letters,
it's,
okay?
It's either leader games or letter games, but we're not using letters as scoring. We're using a number of
perfect.
9.5, so.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, one, Josh, thank you.
Yeah, I try.
For being here and playing games. I always have a great time and thankful for you and all of the gaming we've done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for all that you do and all that you are listening to. And give Josh a round of applause in the Discord chat if you can. He would love that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that'd be great. I am very shy. Yeah, I'm bashful. Ooh.
If you have feedback or want to give us thoughts on this game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I totally understand. I get it. I understand. Don't worry. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com or shoot us an email instead if you don't like socials at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on Board Game Geek. All of these links are in the description below or above or around, side to side, in the forest, in the woods, under the rocks, under
the
creatures,
in the vagabond's
bag. 5-star reviews and subscribing to your pet podcast player of choice is incredibly helpful. Following us on socials and joining the conversation on Discord. These heroic actions are immensely helpful for growing the podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for the cover art and Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music, to Alexa Chislin for the how to play background music. Join us next week, which I don't know what we're talking about. So,
bye, guys. Have a great day.
Join us next week in next week's episode. No, shoot, that's not right. I don't know what next week is.
Keep your notifications on so that you can join us for next week's episode.
In the meantime, may your dice rolls and card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Bye, guys.
Bye.